This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode available each week at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. I'm Aaron Peterson, and I'm going to be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. As all of our loyal listeners know, every once in a while, we like to bring in interviews with independent filmmakers to give you an insight into what goes into getting their films made, as well as insight into the respective film itself. This interview is going to be with writer and director Bo Brinkman. Now, Bo has a pretty extensive career in Hollywood. He actually has been in numerous films, including one of my all-time favorites, Gettysburg. His latest film has been decades in the making, and it's finally coming to video on demand, DVD, and digital platforms on May 23rd. So by the time you're listening to this, it should be available. The Last Man Club follows Captain John Eagle Pinnell. He's a World War II veteran who has learned that his family is going to put him in a retirement home. He also receives a letter from one of his fellow soldiers from the war that reminds him of a pact that they currently have still and haven't fulfilled. Seeing that he no longer has much time left, he sets out to rectify this, get the whole crew together, and basically fulfill this lifelong pact. Along the way, he ends up picking up Romy, who's played by Kate French, and Romy is a character who was on the run from some bad life decisions and ends up finding someone to look up to in Eagle. The film then becomes kind of a road trip as Eagle and Romy grab the Ford Fairlane that Eagle has stored in the garage and set off to collect everyone and fulfill this pact. And of course, people learn some life lessons along the way. And we have a story about valor and honor and legacy. Like I said, Bo Brinkman has been working on this for decades. And it's finally come to fruition. It's finally coming to release. And he wants to tell you why you should see it, what's so special about The Last Man Club. And after seeing the film, I can tell you it's a nice old-fashioned film, something you could watch with your grandparents, your parents, and sit back and just have a good time. I hope you guys enjoy it. Like I said, it's already on video demand, so you can check it out now. It's also on DVD and any other digital platform you have. So be sure to check it out, The Last Man Club. But without further ado, I'm going to get into my interview with Bo Brinkman, who's a great guy and has a very storied career. He talks about some of that, as well as the journey it's been to get this movie made and how excited he is that it's finally getting released. So without further ado, here is my interview with writer-director Bo Brinkman.
Hey, Aaron, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you doing right now?
Oh, good. I wish I was back in L.A., though. It's pretty muggy in Texas.
Are you based in Texas? Is that where you live, or are you based in L.A.?
I live in L.A. I'm just here, you know, for a few weeks.
Are you on a set or?
Well, I came down to I'm gonna start. We're looking at locations for another film, and I'm trying to help the executive producer with the VOD launch.
Okay, sounds great. Well, the first thing I always ask, and I know I've got you for a limited amount of time, but one thing I always ask anyone I talk to is, do you know when the first moment you wanted to get into this business? I know you've been an actor, you've been a director, a writer. Did you know, like, was there a moment where you said, I want to be an artist?
Well, I grew up in a kind of a showbiz family. Since I can remember, I guess, my grandmother, was a musician and did, I have like a couple of dozen cousins. And, you know, we were always doing recitals and stuff growing up. But, we have a long line of people in our family in the business from Sharon Tate to Gene Autry to the Quaid brothers. You know, it's just always been in our blood in this family.
That's pretty great. And some people don't know you were in, I love this movie, I love Gettysburg, and you were Major Taylor in Gettysburg. Which
what a great experience it was. And, you know, we did the prequel called Gods and Generals that was mm-hmm. not as successful. I reprised the role of Walter Taylor, but that was such an incredible experience. It was, you know, get a bunch of guys together, put them on horses, give them guns and swords. I mean, really, it was so much fun. That was a great show. And, you know, the director, the writer director, Ron Maxwell, was a dear friend and is a dear friend. And, one of my mentors, as a director.
Mm-hmm. Was it like, kids just living every fantasy, basically every childhood fantasy?
It really was. And you know, it didn't matter how old you were either, you know, from Tom Berenger to Sam Elliott, you know, everybody was there with the same thing in mind, you know, mm-hmm. horses, guns, and swords, you know, to get to dress up like a soldier, you know. And I'm telling you, that was one of the most memorable things I've ever done. You know, we were there for 3 months, so there was a certain camaraderie that we all had. And And it was a grueling, you know, it was grueling. We were shot in the summer in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, which is about as humid as Houston, Texas. And we were in wool. I mean, we had riding boots to our knees and wool pants and a wool vest and wool coats. They wore coats in those days in the summertime, cotton shirt buttoned up to the neck. And it was grueling.
That's hot.
But at the same time, it was such a great experience and a lot of fun.
That's great. I always try to get people to watch that. It's hard with today's audiences because it's not a short movie. And as soon as you tell them how long it is, they go, "Whoa, it doesn't feel like it. It's worth it."
That's the thing about filmmaking that I kind of miss. Back in the day, when I first got into this business, I did my first movie in 19. I wrote and co-directed my first movie in 1988. And back then, it was like, you take as long as it takes to tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
And today, that is not the case. I mean, the editing has changed. The way we edit films, the way we shoot films has changed because of we all want to get in that 90 minute slot, 90 to, 100 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But we live in a fast-paced society. And you just have to, as a writer, for me, as a screenwriter, I have to tell my story and I have to tell it quickly, short, concise, and exciting, and at the same time, be cinematic, make the story cinematic, no talking heads. People don't have time for that. They don't like to sit and listen to actors talk. A story has to have thrust and move and be cinematic.
Right.
So that's the challenge today, do it in 90 minutes. Ron Maxwell's movie, Gettysburg, was, I think the director's cut was 4.5 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Warner Brothers stepped in and said, "No way." But he fought for every minute that he got on screen.
It's a great movie. Since you've done acting, you've done writing, you've done directing, how's that journey been for you? I mean, to get to where you are now, and I want to talk about Last Man's Club here in a second, but from you personally, what's that journey been like? You've kind of tackled every avenue of it.
Yeah, well, I started out, as a kid, I was writing plays and stuff, the acting came by, just being a theater major. And really I started out in theater, and that's what my true love was and still is, writing and for the stage and also as an actor on the stage. I mean, that's how it started with me. I had a little, 40 seat house theater on Bleecker Street in New York City for about 5 years. And I had a tight-knit group of people that just wanted to make theater.
Mm-hmm.
And we did about 40 plays in 5 years in the 80s, in the early 80s. And it was one of the best times of my life. That's where I grew the most as a writer, as a director, and as an actor. So I kind of tackled everything at once. The writing started early in life, but, that transitioned into the acting and theater, and then that transitioned into film. With film, you always have a bigger audience. It's a wider audience. So if you I'm a storyteller, so I want to get my story out to as many people that I can. Film's the best way to do that.
Well, speaking of the best way to do that, if I'm reading this right, you shot a short in 2002 with Charles Durning for Last Man's Club. So that would mean that the journey to get this movie made has been roughly 15 years. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually a little longer.
Okay.
I met Charlton Heston at a premiere in L.A. back in the 90s, and I had just finished the script. And in talking to him, I was like, off the cuff, I said, "I would love for you to read my script. I think you're perfect for it." And he said, "Well, okay, bring it by the house." And so a couple of days later, I just knocked on his front door, and he answered, and I worked with him for a couple of years on it. At the time, Fraser Heston was going to direct it.
Mm.
And we had Richard Farnsworth involved. And one thing after the other happened. First, Richard Farnsworth died. And then in 2000, Chuck Heston came to me and said, "Look, I've got Alzheimer's, and there's just no way we're going to be able to do this. I can't remember lines anymore." So that was kind of that. I mean, his disease was very aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up getting it up in 2002, And what happened in 2002, it was with Mira Sorvino and Charles Durning at the time. And the reason why I made it into a short is because we lost our funding. There were two groups of investors. It was privately funded. And one of the groups could not become liquid in time for their fulfillment. So we shut down, and I just made a short out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some really great footage, and I just didn't want to throw it away. And we shot on 35. And back then, it was still 35. And so after it shut down, I was pretty disillusioned. And I ended up, I got an offer to shoot some documentaries for the Persecution Project Foundation in Sudan, covering the civil war and the oil genocide. So I went to East Africa and spent the next almost 10 years of my life in East Africa, involved in some documentary work, some reels, you know, shooting reels to raise money for the cause for this organization.
Wow.
And I lived in Nairobi, Kenya for several years. And I ended up actually, you know, I wrote several screenplays while I was over there. So when I came back, we were, you know, my buddies and I were looking for something to do to kind of get my feet wet again. Someone suggested that I took an old one-act play that was produced years ago, and I made it into a small screenplay. It was a feature, and we shot that, won some awards, and we sold it overseas. It was called The Last Mark,
mm-hmm.
and that was in 2011, I believe, or 2012. And then we were looking at my other scripts, and a buddy of mine said, look, you know, you need to reread Last Man Club. This movie needs to be done, and you know, Hollywood had called it a jinx script by this time because everybody that signed up for it died.
The old guy. Wow.
I mean, Charlton Heston, and then at one time we had, you know, Richard Farnsworth, who in his obituary wrote, his publicist dedicated a whole paragraph to our movie, to Last Man Club, in the L.A. Times, in the Sunday section.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, it was really a very nice thing what he did. They called us and said, you know, he really loved this script. He wanted it to be his swan song. He had even called us at one point during his illness and said, do you think I could do it in a wheelchair? And we were like, you know, Fraser Heston and I, we were like, you can do it any way you want. You know, I mean, Richard Farnsworth, I could watch him read the phone book, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we had a lot of bad luck and bad memories with the project. It just we had other actors too that died that wanted to do it, and we never got there with them. I took another read at the script. I hadn't read it in many years. I forgot how much I loved it,
mm-hmm.
and I remembered why I wanted to do it. You know, I wrote it to pay homage to my father, who fought in 7 major battles in the South Pacific, and I wrote it to pay homage to our greatest generation, my father's generation. We just decided to go for it. And I'll tell you what, if this was a jinx project, it certainly proved itself during the filming. It was so crazy. We were 2 weeks into pre-production, and I was diagnosed with ocular melanoma.
This script really is cursed, I think, at this point.
It was unbelievable. So, you know, everybody thought we were going to shut down. I said, absolutely, we're not shutting down. We went to Tucson, Arizona, and shot the first week there. And then everybody went back to Texas, and I went to Los Angeles to have two operations on my eye and radiation. So we shut down for a month.
You still went forward with it. That's great.
This time I said, it's either going to kill me or I'm going to kill it. We're going to get this movie done. And I even had somebody, if I didn't make it out of surgery, I even had somebody that was going to step in and direct. So, you know, it was, I just couldn't believe it. You know, all the stops and starts. As a matter of fact, the first night that we were in Tucson out in the desert, in the there was a beautiful stuff that we shot in the graveyard. It's an old airplane graveyard. Mm-hmm. All these relic airplanes are sitting out on the desert, and it's just beautiful. We were shooting at night, and a sandstorm hit us on our first night on the desert, and we had 40-mile-an-hour winds. The generator choked up and quit, so we were in absolute blackout. So the wind, the sand was blowing, you know, cross sideways, and it knocked over a 6K light, knocked it over, the whole thing. I mean, that exploded, and, you know, it was like, and then the car that we were using broke down all in one night. And I remember walking out in the, you know, just a few days from my eye operation, you know, I'm walking out in the sand store, looking up at the sky going, is there a higher power at work here? I mean, my goodness, I never had so much trouble making a movie before. And so, but we got it done. We got flooded out once in Texas, and we couldn't find we have an old 58 Ford Fairlane that we used in the movie, but we couldn't find another one. And in the movie, you know, it's red in a lot of scenes, and they paint the car. Actually, right. It starts out black, and then they paint the car red. And we see them paint it red with, you know, spray cans, but, you know, you never shoot a movie in sequence. So we had to repaint that car like 8 or 9 times.
Oh, and really?
Sometimes on the same day, we'd have a scene where it was red, and then we'd shoot another scene coverage while our guys were painting it black. I mean, it was a real struggle.
That's great. How did you get the cast? You had a great cast. You got James, Kate, William, Barry, a couple of my personal favorites, and Michael Madsen and the late Michael Massey. How did you get the cast together?
Well, Shannon McCannion is my casting director. I've known her for many, many years, and we just sat down and went through everything. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, so people that came on board had to do it because they loved the project. Jim McCrell had been... He's actually my first cousin's uncle, and he had moved from Los Angeles back to Texas like 20 years ago, retired.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd done a lot of movies. And I said, you know what? This guy has the absolute look that I'm looking for. And, you know, he certainly had the resume. So I just, you know, I dragged him out of retirement. But, and then, you know, Morgan Shepherd, I'd done a couple of movies with before, God's Generals, Gettysburg, and I think one other.
Mm-hmm.
Barry Corbin, I ran into him at a film festival years before we started, and he brought the script up. He said, you know, hey, what'd you ever do with that damn Last Man Club? I really like that script. And I didn't even know that he had read it. I said, I'll tell you what, when we get ready, I'll give you a call. And I, you know, it was years later, and I called him. I actually ran into him again, and I said, hey, you know, I want to send you that script. And so that's how kind of it came together. But yeah, everybody there, they knew how hard I had worked on trying to get the thing up. And so it was really an act of love and hard work. Everybody pitched in and we got it done.
That's great. I want to tell you, it's a very sweet kind of old fashioned movie, which is nice. I really respect, because I'm a military man, former military myself. My grandfathers were both in the military too, so I really appreciate awesome. That you took a respectful look at it, because sometimes it's not really looked at that way in movies, you know that, and it's nice that.
Yeah.
Was that an important thing? Kind of last question as we head out. Was that an important thing for you? Was to convey this. The old ways, I guess, is how it's back in the olden days of military. It was very much about valor and honor and duty and loyalty.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure that was in there because that's who those guys are. And you know, I did not want to make any kind of political statement, mm-hmm. which is, you know, you can't watch a movie these days about the military with there being a kind of a political slant on it. And I didn't want any of that. I just wanted to show these people as real men and through their camaraderie, they become men again. You know, they were kind of, in the beginning, they're all swept under the rug, all of them. One's going into an insane asylum. The other one is going into an old folks home. The other one's already been put away because he's got Alzheimer's. And then, of course, Will character, he's living in a camper trailer, you know, behind a bar. So they've lost their way, and through their camaraderie, they become men again. They see their value, and I just wanted that you know that to be kind of the spine of the story, and so much that Romy, who has this checkered cast with men, through their journey, she gains respect and the understanding of what a real man is, mm-hmm. and it's these guys, you know, honor and valor and camaraderie And she sees that, and she's never seen that before. Because you know what? We don't really see that anymore in our society, not as much. And it just showed her something, this young person, this young girl, it showed her something that she'd never seen or had never been experienced. She'd never seen that.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody grows. There's a character arc and with all the characters, and there's an arc in the story, and that is the crux of it, is you know, Romy discovering what a real man is. Through these men who discovered as real men, if that makes sense.
It does. Yeah, it does. I know those aren't words that people like to use anymore, but there's something refreshing in a way about that. So I appreciate that. What's next for Bo?
Well, we're doing a movie called Goat Hill Road. It's a movie about vengeance and how wrong it is, inspired by a true story, and it's about a preacher whose brother is murdered. There's a huge miscarriage of justice. The two perpetrators are basically let off scot-free, and the preacher leaves his family and his congregation and infiltrates into the drug world to find one of these guys because the other one was in witness protection program. It's a journey. It's a kind of a soul-searching journey. It's got a lot of action in it, and you know, it's very commercial, but there's just a solid message in it. You can't take the law into your own hands, and vengeance is wrong. Yeah, I developed the script over the last couple of years, and we have offers on actors right now, and we're looking for a mid-August start date.
Well, congratulations, and best of luck on the release.
Oh, thank you so much, and appreciate your time.
Thanks for coming on.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
There you go, guys. That was my interview with writer-director Bo Brinkman. Again, the movie is The Last Man Club. It is on video on demand right now, as well as DVD. So be sure to check it out. It came out May 23rd. I hope you guys enjoy it. It's a nice, like I said, it's a nice old-fashioned tale. I really enjoyed the story it was telling, and I thought all the actors were great. James McCrell is in it. Kate French as Romy was really good. William Shepard, Barry Corbin is always a blast. Michael Massey, William McNamara, Jake Busey, the cast goes on and on. It's a great cast. So I hope you guys check it out. Definitely enjoy it. And I hope you enjoyed this interview with writer-director Bo Brinkman. Once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. We try to bring you these interviews with filmmakers in the world of independent cinema whenever we can. So I really hope you enjoyed this one. Be sure to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Our normal show has a new episode every week and is available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into a theater or watch The Last Man's Club at home, buy popcorn.